This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Joey.
Hi.
It's so great to have you, Joey Spector. My amazing husband over here, the grip for today, he introduced me to you, and we kind of did a recap or, you know, a talk before this about you. Your story is incredible. And I'm in all honesty, I kind of just want to get to know your story and kind of give you the floor to kind of tell people in our audience who you are and your story and what you're all about.
I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, I love that.
Would I be overstepping if I kicked it off with a little prayer? Is that okay?
Would love that.
All right. God, thank you so much for bringing us together, for cultivating new friendships and facilitating dialogue. And I would just really ask you that with your guidance, you kind of guide our hearts and our minds and our tongues, and you let the dialogue flow in the way that we're reaching somebody who needs to hear what we have to say. Particularly if we're hitting up somebody who is in the struggle right now, that just this conversation would put it on their hearts that they're stronger than they even know and they can endure, and that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. There is hope on the other side of darkness, and that they matter and they're loved and they're not alone. And Lord, make it happen. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, guys.
Yes. So you were a firefighter at one point.
Yes.
But now you go and you speak to departments in all aspects, like police, firefighters. Okay, tell me, how did you become a firefighter?
Well, first I was a police officer.
Shut up.
No, yeah, I was. Yeah.
Well, that's news. Yeah. Okay, I love that.
I've kind of walked both paths. Okay. I went to NAU when I was in my 20s, and I graduated with I had to get my bachelor's degree in 3 years because I wanted to become a cop. Like, that's all I wanted to do.
Love
so
that.
I got this criminal justice degree. I wanted to get hired right when I turned 21. I got hired, and I just kind of like went right from mom and dad's house to the police department. And I was young. I was way too young, to be honest with you. I was young and inexperienced.
Yeah.
And I grew up real fast doing that job.
Yeah. I love that.
And kind of became the principled person that I am, honestly, through the police academy. Like, I had never had experienced core values and integrity and grit and endurance and hard work. And a lot of this comes into play in the story later, but testing myself beyond what I thought I could mentally, pushing through getting pepper sprayed. And you know, having to run 11 miles uphill on shin splints. Like, I left the job because it didn't really line up with my temperament, but it really forged who I was and kind of converted me from boy to man real fast. And then going and solving problems 10 times a day and seeing like a lot of people, I grew up kind of in the hood and seeing people in Section 8 housing doing so much worse and seeing the chaos of the world and the trauma and the tragedy. And there was a lot I liked about the adventure and serving. And but I just, I'm not geared towards conflict. I'm geared towards harmony. And so like show up and there's a domestic violence and I feel really bad for the woman because she's getting hurt by the husband and then I arrest the husband and the woman is mad at me and the guy's spitting on me while I'm arresting it. It was just like, oh man, this kind of sucks. And so actually our chief, our fire, our current fire chief, Chief Espy, was a firefighter at the time.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if you know Dave Zimmerman, he's a captain.
Okay. You might know.
So those guys, I would, we worked in what they called the Square Mile, which is like the original town site of Surprise. And it's adjacent to El Mirage. And it was maybe not like as rough as the neighborhood I grew up in, but it was the roughest part of Surprise and it had its challenges. And so I felt right at home there. So that's where I patrolled and that's where I stayed. And that's where old Fire Station 301 was. And so I ran with those guys on a lot of calls. And Chief Espy, our current fire chief, is the person who told me like, Joe, when are you going to come to the fire department? We had actually gone in a car accident and it was pretty interesting. He'll always tell me, do you remember the horse call? I'm like, yeah, man, that's when I came over. A truck that was carrying some horses got into a car accident and we were kind of tending to the people. I was a police officer, he was a firefighter, and he and I were petting these horses and I didn't know anything about horses, but I love animals. And he was like showing me how to pet the horse and kind of connect with it. And that's when he was like, you're way too nice to be a cop. When are you gonna be a fireman? And then—
There's some rivalry there too.
There's like, a little bit of—
I hear about it all the time, like,
It's friendly rivalry
friendly,
now.
Yes.
At that time, it wasn't so friendly rivalry. No, it wasn't. It was our chief's did not like each other. And there were some firemen who, this is like third party information. It was right before I got hired, but like some cops who were in a struggle getting into a fight and the firemen didn't help. And there was, it was a little bit of animosity back then. Now, it's a really fun rivalry. And the, I've loved watching it unfold over the last like probably 15 years. Our cops and our firemen really get along really well and they care about each other. And like, it used to be a little tense when I got hired because this is like almost 25 years ago. It's cool now that every, like now it's fun rivalry, softball game rivalry, but like they connect and they care and the spouses get along. It's awesome. But anyway, so then Dave Zimmerman and I would stop by another call I went on with Zim. And I got called to help them out because there was a homeless dude and he was struggling, but there was like, he didn't want to go to the hospital and he wasn't really committing a crime. And we were just talking to him and he was like, I'm just really like hungry. And so I went in the Chevron at El Mirage and Bell. It used to be just like, there wasn't much out there, but that's where the call was. I went inside and I got him some food and Zimmerman pulled me aside. He's like, you need to come to where we are. Like Zim is a good godly dude. And he like, that, I think that really moved him. He's like, come to the station, dude. Like we're hiring. And like, without giving away too much trade craft, back in the day, you could have a lot of influence over who got hired. Like if they wanted somebody to get hired, you know, like you could get helped out a lot. And he's like, dude, we've been talking about it. Like we see you on calls. You come. I'd go to the fire station after like going to jail and getting spit on, like I told you. And like the admin at the time, the PD admin is different now. At the time, it was a rough admin. They didn't support their people. So like you go to the station and it was hostile, you know?
Really?
And I'd go to the, yes, for sure. There's been chiefs that have come and gone. And back in the day, Surprise grew very fast and they weren't really equipped with good leadership necessarily. And so the he's long gone, but the police chief at the time, it just, it wasn't a great environment. I go to the fire station and like Chief Bearden, you probably never met him, but he was cool. He was cool. He would have his feet up on the table. The guys were playing cards. They're barbecuing. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should come over here. Like everybody's getting along. Everybody seems to be having fun. Nobody's yelling at you. They're like, no, everybody thanks us, you know? And I'm like, all right. So started the process moving. Ended up getting number one on the hiring exam, left the PD, went to the fire, stayed in the same city. There was a huge rivalry between our chiefs. Our chief was very mad at me for leaving, and Chief White was very happy to have stolen a cop from the fire department. It was like,
I was gonna say,
it was kind of a thing.
Like a feather in his cap.
It was kind of, and it was like, I had to keep it secret while I was there. And then cat got out of the bag and I had some hostility while I was still on the job. It was nuts.
Oh
but anyways, I shifted over. I kept my relationships intact. I'm still friends with all the cops. Like I still have a great rapport there. And, but like really the fire department kind of felt like home, like at least the job itself, it's evolved a little bit, but, it was much better for my temperament. And, so yeah, went through the ranks, climbed up the ranks, firefighter, engineer, tested for captain and was sitting in the number one. I don't know if you guys know Ryan Flynn. He got number one. I got number two. He beat me that summer. So he got promoted right away. So I was sitting in the number one list and had my own truck, and I was acting in that spot for like a year. Wow. And one of our other captains was about to retire, and I was going to get her spot. So that's kind of like, I went on a long tangent, but you asked about my career. That's kind of how that went.
So you're in the fire department now. So how long were you in the department? And when did things start to change for you? Like, when did you start seeing like, okay, something's not okay? If you want to go into that.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely comfortable going into it. I didn't really see that things were not okay until things were not okay for me, which is after I left the department. So
after you left.
Okay. Yeah. So I,
so you retired.
I retired. So I was a police officer for 4 years.
Okay.
While I was on the job on the police department, I got into a car accident while on patrol. And it was a kind of a bad accident. I hit my head on the window. I lost consciousness. I had a brain injury, bulged a couple discs in my neck. And, but it wasn't career ending bad. But what happened is over the couple weeks after that accident, some weird stuff started happening. My jaw started locking up. My eyes started twitching. Mm-hmm. My neck started spasming. And they couldn't really figure out what was going on because it wasn't like the typical stuff with the bulged discs in the neck. So they sent me to a neurologist.
Okay.
And the brain injury had caused this thing called dystonia. And so it's like a neuromuscular condition.
Wow.
The part of my brain that got damaged in the TBI affects like muscle control in your face and in your neck. And so my eyes, you know, if you've ever had like an eye twitch, like a really, so they go top, bottom, left, right, both eyes very bad, like for days or weeks or months at a time. And so it kind of started gradually, one eye and then another one. And then and then I'm having like eye twitches nonstop. And so the neurologist was like, hey, we can treat this with Botox. I don't look this good from Botox.
Okay.
It's the Botox that goes around my eyeball. I'm just joking, by the way. It goes around my eyeballs, like right in the muscles that are twitching.
Okay.
And every 3 months, I go get these Botox injections from the neurologist. And usually around the 2.5 month mark, they kind of wear off and my face starts spasming. But and then I get it again. FDA allows you to get it every 3 months. And so it wasn't that big of a deal. I got PT for the bulged disc, got into yoga, got into chiropractic, massage, just taking care of my core and all that stuff. Going to the neurologist, getting these Botox, go to the fire department.
Yeah.
And then I was a firefighter for a little over 11 years. So, So I was 15 years, a little over 15 years total, four on the PD and a little over 11 on the fire department.
Okay.
And I was in the captain's position. And we ran a call in 2017 on Valentine's Day, a nosebleed call. And really minor deal, but it sucks. This is the way my career went out. It's like the worst story ever. I hate telling it. It's like embarrassing. It sucks. Like I had a pretty awesome career with a lot of hairy situations, and the way I went out is kind of whack. But it's just part of my journey. Humility. So so we treated this elderly patient for a nosebleed.
Okay.
And
I thought nosebleed was like code for something more serious, it's literally a nosebleed. No,
like her nose was bleeding and it needed to get cauterized, so we clipped it up. We sent her off to the hospital.
Okay.
And it was like I had been acting as a captain for a year, and I got moved back down to engineer just because of weird staffing stuff. So I actually got to go back to my old truck, which was kind of fun. I didn't mind getting moved back down. Okay. Some people don't like it because you lose the pay. I missed my crew. It was awesome, actually. I missed Mike Morris. That's like my best bud. He's my captain. He mentored me to become a captain.
Okay.
Pat Carpenter cooks really good. It was awesome. So I was hanging with the homies.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to TalkSpace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at TalkSpace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at TalkSpace.com.
Back on engine 302, treated the patient. The husband is talking to Mike Morris and my crew, asking how to follow the ambulance to the hospital to see his wife. Mm-hmm. And I'm kneeling down on the ground, putting the monitor cords away. Uh-huh. And my back is to everybody. And I'm just like sanitizing the monitor or whatever. Yeah. And the patient stumbles and trips. And he's like an obese elderly dude.
No.
And he's carrying a golf bag. And I didn't see this happen. This is like pieced together from my crew. I'm just putting the monitor cords away, but he falls on top of me and he's like a big, big dude. And he falls right on my head. Like the golf bag hits my head and then he's laying on top of me and I'm like crumbled up and my neck is all at a weird angle. And Pat Carpenter and Mike Morris are like pulling him off of me. And it's like all of my stuff from my neck, like my pain started shooting down my arm. I hadn't had that in a long time, but it was like, I knew something was like wrong, you know? And so I went back to the station. Pat drove the truck. I was like hurting. And I was just trying to ride it out. I was like icing my neck and stuff, but like all the spasms started flaring up. And Mike Morris, after a couple hours, was like, you got to go home, dude. Like, I can't run three men all night. And I'm like, I can get through this. And he's like, no, and you got to ride it up. And at the time, I'm very glad I wrote this up because it's how I got my injury covered through workers' comp with like my medications, you know, but I didn't want to write it up. I fought him on it. I'm like, I'm not writing up that I'm going home because an old guy fell on top of me on a golf bag, you know? And it was so embarrassing. Like, I don't want you to, and especially at the time, like, everybody's going to know about that. You know
what
I mean?
Well, because the firefighters, I'm learning so much about the culture. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I learn, he's like, oh, they just will bust your
balls. We eat our own.
Yes. It is hilarious. He's like, Sarah, I can't say that because they will rag, you know. So I get it now.
They're going to think I was a fragile B shifter, not a C shifter going home for that injury. Because those guys were all injured at the time. That's probably changed. But like at the time, there was like 15 guys out on injury on B shift. So everybody called B shifters fragile. But,
oh, no.
And I'm like a C shifter. We don't get injured and go home like that, let alone from an old guy falling on top of you, you know?
So there's competition within your own shifts.
For like, sure.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
And so, so Mike's like, no, dude, like I can see your freaking neck spasming from here. Like, you got to write this up. We got to go home. Cool. Go home. Get an appointment with the neurologist. Like, man, this happened. I need some new, we need to up the dosage. And he's like, well, you're already at the max dosage on the Botox. And, you know, I can get you like another epidural in for your neck, but this is not going to get any better. Yeah. And I was like 2 weeks away from when I could get my shots again. So he's like, you're going to have to kind of ride this out. But my eyes were like, over the next 2 weeks, they started actually spasming, like shut. It got real weird. The symptoms were real rough, like real bad pain. And so Mike Payne, who was our, I think it was either Chris Priest or Mike Payne, one was dealing with workers' comp, one was dealing with union stuff, but they were like, hey, when is your return to work date? Like, because I'm on PTO, now they're putting me out on workers' comp. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know. So I follow up with the neurologist. I go back and it's time to get my injections. Mm-hmm. He's able to give me more injections, get the eye spasms in check. And I'm like, hey, I need my return to work date. Like, what is this looking like? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I can't give you a return to work date. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, cause like, dude, honestly, I knew I was struggling, but like every time I got injured or hurt, I could get a new set of shots or new PT and go back on the truck. It wasn't really, chronic pain was like, I was used to it and it wasn't a big deal. We all deal with that, right? Like it doesn't, not fun, but like not gonna keep me from working. Yeah. I'm like 2 months away from getting promoted to captain. Mm-hmm. I'm like, and this was the most, like, it's a little different now. It was competitive, like 30 of us tested and there was one opening and then there was about to be a second one and it was me. Like I had to study hard for that test for like 2 years. And it was like, it was just gonna be awesome. You know, like my kids were going to the fire station, right, drawing pictures, dad's the captain. Like it was just like, I was in the best spot in my life. So it was like in my career, like it was not the time to, I hadn't had a top 3 years. Like I was just getting where I needed to be.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, that doesn't sound right, doc. You know, like, and he's like, well, I kind of shared this with you because same doctor since the injury in 05. So now we're at like, I don't know, at this point, like 18, wait, what is that? 2017. So 12 years he'd been treating me with this, you know? And he's like, I told you this is progressive. And if it gets worse, like you got a couple things going on. You're disc herniated now.
Yeah.
You got stenosis on your spine. So like it's iffy, like the shooting pain can get turn into like loss of use of limbs, but he's like, more importantly, like your eyes, that gets worse. Like that could, a lot of people go functionally blind from this. Like, as you get older, this will get worse and worse. Trauma makes it worse. This kind of accelerated it. Mm-hmm. He had shared all that with me when I was like 24 or 23 and I got hurt, but I wasn't paying attention.
You're 24.
You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, get back in my patrol car, you know? So he had like a heart to heart with me telling me about like, you can't safely do your job with this. And like, and I, so he's like, I can get you a second opinion if you'd like. And I'm like, yes, give me a second opinion, dude. Mm-hmm. So I go to Barrow's Neurology. Mm-hmm. And if I could deviate to a little bit of a moment I have with my creator at this moment, mm-hmm. like this was pretty interesting. So, as I was walking into Barrow's, my world was rocked. Mm-hmm. Like I left my neurologist. Mm-hmm. I went into the front office. The lady who works at the front office is really nice and her son is a Peoria captain. Mm-hmm. And we're like friendly. I've been going to this doctor's office every 3 months for 10 years. She was able to get me in with a doctor. Literally, like, she's like, this is going to take forever. She called, they had like an availability that day. So I actually left my neurologist's office and went right to Barrow's. Mm-hmm. They had faxed over all my stuff and all the mm-hmm. imaging and all that stuff, the brain. But like on the car ride, like I had just gotten told, like we're planning my promotion ceremony, you know, and now I'm like, how do I go tell my wife, like this doctor just said I have to retire? And I don't believe him at this moment that I have to retire. Like it got so bad for a while with symptoms, it became undeniable. But at that moment, it just was like, I wasn't anticipating it.
Yeah.
And so I pull into Barrow's Neurology and like, they're high end on neurology, but what they mostly treat is ALS. And I didn't know much about ALS at the time. Mm-hmm. And I get in the parking lot and I'm like, I call Chris Priest and I'm like, this is what my doctor just said. I'm going to a different doctor trying to hear something different. I'm in the parking lot right now. He's like, all right, let me know what they hear. And I'm like having a hard time maintaining my composure. Mm-hmm. I never really had like, I don't want to call it a panic attack, but just like my heart is racing and I'm just like overwhelmed with what I'm experiencing. It's just such a gear shifting of what I was expecting to hear. I thought he was going to like give me an extra dose of Botox and we were going to be good to go. Give me another epidural. Yeah. Yeah. Let's rock and roll. And like, it's like, no. But then I walked into this place and I'm feeling kind of sorry for myself and sad and scared and all these weird emotions that now I know how to process, but I didn't have labels for them at the time because nobody taught me about emotions growing up, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just feeling like uncomfortable. But I walk in and I go into this elevator with this young lady who's a lot younger than me and she's in like arm braces and she's very, ALS is ugly. Yeah. And she's just so sweet. She's like, hi, how are you? And I'm like, not great, not you know, good. But she just, I'll never forget. She had this like beautiful smile and this warm presence. Yeah. And she's like, hang in there, you'll be okay, you know? And I'm like, all right, thank you, you know?
Yeah.
And I go see the doc and he's like, it's like a 5 minute appointment. My eyes are actively spasming. My neck is locked. My neck is at a weird angle. He's reviewing the brain scans. He's like, your doc is right, bro. Like I can't release you. You could, you know, if they have an office that I think now they can put you in the office. They didn't have any office availability, so you had two options: retirement or like a full-time position in the office if you have a permanent injury. And so he wrote that up, same opinion. So then I go home and I don't even remember if I told my wife just yet. I was still reeling. My wife and I were scrambling. We had two little ones at home. My babies were like, I don't know, 5 and 3 or 4 and 2 at the time. And we had a little routine, like I would put them down for naps and it was just like fun. They napped together at that time. And I always kind of liked it. Like they snuggled up on me and I would, they would nap next to me. I'd take like little selfies. I still have like pictures, but this time it wasn't. So like I was pretending it was okay and trying to relax, get my wife and I cross paths. I got the kids down and I'm just like, the kids are asleep next to me. And I'm just like, what the is going on? Like what? Like I'm trying to catch up and I start Googling. I don't really even remember why, but I'm like, I'm praying. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I wasn't even like crying. I was just like, I remember I was like real activated. My heart was racing. Mm-hmm. I'm just, it's very weird when suddenly somebody tells you your whole life is changing in an instant, you know, but then I Googled, ALS. Sorry about that, bro. So I Googled ALS and I started looking up Lou Gehrig's disease and like I learned, because all these people in the waiting room had it too and you could tell they were jacked up, but I didn't know much about it.
Yeah.
It's an awful disease. Yeah. And that poor young lady had a way worse prognosis than me. And like, it's not, you don't dismiss your trauma because other people have it worse. No. But like, I had this overwhelming sense from God, like, this isn't good, but imagine having to figure out how to tell your wife and kids that you had a terminal illness like that was going to do what, because it's a bad prognosis when you have ALS. It's a quick death and it's pretty painful. You stop being able to swallow and all stuff. And I was like, I felt like it was impossible to feel upset about my, I'm upset about my circumstances, but like, what are the odds that, and that young lady was so warm, and it just like, it just,
I was gonna say that, yeah.
It was just like, she can maintain a positive attitude, I can, and also like there but for the grace, like, why is she stuck with that? And I'm sitting here going, okay, yeah, like a medical pension is 50% of my income. That's going to be hard. That's not a death sentence. No. Like, imagine if I had, what a, and I was walking through, like, what would this conversation look like with my family if I hit, because that was part of the thing the guy tested me for, was like, he ruled out ALS because they're very related. Okay. Multiple sclerosis, what I have in ALS, and mine is by far the most benign of all of them. Like, I, you know, like, it's inconvenient and it's painful and it's uncomfortable, but it doesn't kill you.
No. No.
And I was just thinking, like, and like, he was like testing me for it, you know, and I'm like, and then I got nervous when he was testing me for it. And then he's like, no, it's not that. Like, I see this all day long. It's the, you know, and I was thinking, like, what would that conversation? So I'm laying there with my babies asleep next to me, and I'm thinking, like, okay, I have, we have some tough conversations to have, but it's not the toughest. And I just like, I felt okay with it. I'm still uncomfortable, sad, scared, all that stuff. But like, the impending doom of it all, and the like, this, I can't get through this, was like gone, because it was like, you could be in this position. And it was just like a beautiful, but I often think about her and that situation. And so
those could be also moments where you can take and say, I mean, me listening to it, I immediately think that was God putting her in that elevator with you. It's not going to take away everything that you're going through. I don't think that's what it's meant to do, but it's also a reminder. Like, and those people, I always find the people who are suffering the most sometimes have the most beautiful, you know, personalities and outlook on life. Yes. You know, some of the most, you know, but
I 100% agree that God put her in my path for that. And I admire her, the people who are suffering like that and have that warrior spirit, and they're willing to, people dying of cancer, willing to just radiate positivity onto you, and they're making you feel better. It's just, it's a weird thing that some people like that have that amazing spirit of compassion and empathy. And it's like, I should.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Be here consoling you, but you're consoling me.
Consoling me,
those people are remarkable, and she's one of them, and she's a... I'm probably an angel, you know, like, she's a bit like,
you never know.
You never know.
You never know who's on the train with you. I always say that.
I don't know, but I firmly believe that God put her in my path, and she's a remarkable human being. Oh, and 100%. She'll, you know, that moment interaction kind of changed everything for me, but it was still kind of overwhelming and frustrated.
Mm-hmm. So this is the part where, like, my husband came home and talked about you, and I was almost in tears. And if you want to share the process of your kind of, I would say, mental decline.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, if you want to share that.
Yes, okay, so I ended up in that process that I just shared with you, really having no other option but a medical retirement. And so the same building where I was supposed to get promoted in like 12 weeks turned into a process where people evaluated my injury and listened to doctors, and I ended up retiring. Mm-hmm. And leading up to that, there was like 7 months of, no pun intended, like purgatory, because like, it's like four meetings. You go to the independent doctor, you go to the fire department doctor, they have a couple of hearings, but like every 3 months is one of these appointments. So for like 7 months, you're kind of just sitting there at home, like sitting in this, and like going to different doctors, getting different treatments, and not knowing like what's happening with your career. And during that time, it just became very difficult. I retired my pension. I'm very thankful for it, but it was like captain pay to 50% of your engineer pay is a big drop.
Okay.
And we had Dave Ramsey'd up our finances. So like we had some savings mm-hmm. and had been diligent. We cut mm-hmm. a lot of stuff out, but like Dave the bills were piling up mm-hmm. and our union was nice enough. They cut me a check for $5,000 to cover some medical costs while we were waiting for workers' comp because they battle everything.
Yeah.
People were very supportive.
Yeah.
But a lot of things started happening all within that time frame. So the day that I medically retired, I left the fire department and my wife and I were in the car, and I don't know, I woke up that morning to go to the hearing and I vomited. I was mm-hmm. so nervous and uncomfortable with what was going on.
Yeah.
I drove there. They kind of reviewed everything and I had to share my story, and people were there and supporting. The city attorney was crying, and then they kind of like adjourned the meeting and said, you know, yeah, thank you for your service. You retired. And then all of a sudden it was kind of silent in the room. And then I heard this like almost like shriek a little bit. It was my wife. I'd kind of forgotten she was in the room in the civilian section, and she was just sobbing. And Chris Priest got up and gave her some tissues, and we just were like driving home like, what the hell just happened? Like that just happened. This feels like a year-long bad dream, you know?
Yeah.
And I called Mike Morris and I was like, I'm retired, I guess, you know? And I couldn't, I have a lot of emotional processing skills now that I didn't have then. Yeah. And I just felt really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting in the house. Like I said, let's go pick up the kids. We had a babysitter. I said, let's go to a movie. And Leslie's like, what? My wife? I'm like, I need something. I gotta get out of here. You. I need a distraction. Yeah. So we picked up the kids. We went to the Lego Ninjago movie. This is going to get real heavy for a minute. Okay, guys. So it's going to hurt. But we grabbed my kids. We walked in the movie theater. We're watching the Lego Ninjago movie. And my phone is buzzing. And it's like repeatedly my friend's wife, Demery. And I'm still trying to process my career. I can't pay attention to the movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm ignoring it. And finally, she's like, are you there? Are you there? Like 10 text messages. I text her back, Dem. Like, I can't talk right now. Yeah. Like, and she texts me, have you heard about Dan? And I said, no. And she said, Dan's dead. And it's one of my best friends, mm-hmm. like on the planet. And the night before, he had been drinking and driving, and he pulled his truck out in front of a tow truck, and he got into a horrible car accident. And I learned about that on the day that I lost my career. Mm-hmm. And I was at the Esplanade movie theater, and I just got up and I walked out, and I was like, holding on to the guardrail. It's like a balcony, and it was like the world was like spinning. And then I ended up going to the bathroom at AMC and like throwing up again. Like, I've never thrown up from emotions. Yeah. I've done it like in this story, there's the third time I did it too. Like, it was just weird. And so my best friend is dead. Mm-hmm. My career is gone. Mm-hmm. I don't have any money or ability to even fly out to Texas to his funeral. He had mm-hmm. just moved a couple months before that. And I'm just like becoming real depressed, mm-hmm. and I'm really very energetic and bubbly. So it's hard on my family to see my emotions go away, like numb, you know? Mm-hmm. And over the next year, like my mom had kind of like some weird cognitive issues that became dementia that she didn't recognize me anymore or my kids. And, my both of my dogs got cancer, and one of them died, and that was my kids will tell you my favorite kids are my dogs. Like, that was so hard for me, but it crushed my kids. And so I had to kind of like swallow my own grief. In fact, teaching my kids, like, Dad's no longer a fireman, we can't afford to do X, Y, or Z anymore. And now Uncle Dan is dead and the dog is dead, and you can't see Grandma Jan anymore, because she, like, my mom was so sweet. She was like the nicest human. And sometimes when you get dementia, you kind of get aggressive or angry. It's her. It was a disease. And I couldn't bring my kids around her anymore. And I just was like, that was really hard. And then both of my wife's grandparents died that year, like shortly. So both of my kids' great grandparents, they lost two dogs. They lost their grandmother, their great grandmother, mm-hmm. and then their poppy and their nana. They were just like losing people left and right, and we were losing people left and right. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like, there's no more rides in the fire truck, and Dad's the captain. It's like Dad is withdrawn and in his bedroom doing nothing, you know? And like, let me collect myself here and think about what else happened. We had more losses too. I don't even remember. There was more, there was a couple more deaths. And it just was like, we were falling apart. Like my wife and I was withdrawing, she was drinking, and my kids were floundering, and my daughter started becoming very emotionally dysregulated, like so much so that she would have these meltdowns that lasted like 5 or 6 hours and she was like biting, hitting, punching, like hissing, like getting kicked out of school. And like just 6 months ago, we were like this happiest family ever. Like, and it was very weird. And we were going to like different therapists. There was all these diagnoses. It's probably the trauma you guys have experienced. It's oppositional defiance disorder. It's ADHD. It's this, like so many different diagnoses, but essentially, the only thing that ever, there was a common theme running through it was like, if you guys can emotionally regulate, you can help her through this. And we weren't really in a position to learn how to emotionally regulate. Neither one of us knew how to do that. And so her tantrums and her meltdowns kept getting worse and worse. And in retrospect, I wasn't equipped to help parent her through that. Yeah. And so one day, like this is to answer your question, we're getting to that day now.
If you want to.
No, I'm good. Sure. I'm good. Okay. I just need a minute. No, okay. I'm good. I'm okay. I just want to frame my words. I'm okay. I'll let you know if I need to tap out. I've done this a lot. I'm okay with it. It needs to be said. I'm good with it. I just want to, I need to piece together the order of everything that happened. I was having bad symptoms. My jaw had been spasming so bad I had broken some teeth. I was going to physical therapy where they would do this dry needling thing, which was the only thing that would help in between the Botox to release the spasms, go get some relief. I had to divert from physical therapy because my daughter was getting kicked out of school because she was yelling and ripping the whiteboard off. Yeah. And this is common for us now. Never had kids in trouble. I'm on a first name basis with every administrator at the school. I divert from my treatment. I go pick up my daughter. She had a really bad day. She would vacillate. As soon as she would come out of these rages, she would have shame and she would like hate herself. It was so heartbreaking, my little baby. She went through so much. And so I got her home and she was in the shame state and the embarrassment from what happened at school. And I put on Mr. Rogers for her. And like that was like my go-to growing up. That's like who taught me about emotions. So we watched an episode and we like worked through some feelings together. And just kind of sat with her in it. And then my dad had called me because he needed some help because he was like watching my mom full time and she had escaped and she was like trying to get into other people's cars. And like, he's like this, he was running ragged. He was declining watching her. So I'm like helping my dad corral my mom. I'm not supposed to leave my daughter. She's like six at this time, maybe. I have her on Mr. Rogers on earphones. I lock up the door, I throw the alarm on, I text my wife like now she's 13, I can leave her alone. At this time that wasn't, but like I'm like, I gotta leave Sophie alone. The door's locked, I let the neighbors know the alarm is on. I wanna let you know, I gotta go help my dad with my mom. I go help my dad with my mom. And then I get home and I don't even remember why my wife and I were fighting, but we get like, whatever happens, the dust settles from all that. And we get into this big argument, probably over nothing, because at the time we just like didn't have communication skills that we have now, you know? And I left the house in like a, I just need to get out. Like when you go into fight or flight, I was in flight. I'm like, she and I are yelling at each other. I had the day from hell and I just left my house and I didn't know where I was going or what I was doing. And I ended up driving to Sunny Slope and finding some parking lot in an abandoned building. And I was just like sitting in my truck. I had a 4Runner at the time. And just like, I never had any suicidal ideations. Like I never thought about quitting the journey that I was on. I felt like, God, why are you doing this to me? But like, I know you're doing this for a reason and I can get through it. And like, I don't know, like I was telling you about the pepper spray in the academy. Like I don't generally tap out or quit. Like I'll pass out before I tap out, you know? And so I was like, I got this. It sucks. I'm not comfortable. I don't know what I'm doing, but I've got, like, I will figure this out for my family. But the reality is I felt like a failure. I felt like such a failure. My kids who were doing so well were floundering and I'm their leader. And our finances that I had worked so hard to do well with were floundering. My wife is struggling. Like, my whole flock is just falling apart. And and my identity was really wrapped up in work. I got in at a time where like we were really tight with each other, and that was a big, we did a lot of family stuff together.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Like, I didn't get it. Like, now you can't joke around and have fun over there. We joked around and we had a lot of fun, and that was removed from me. So yeah. I'm just like sitting at home in this chaos for a year while I'm dealing with therapy and for my kids that I can't afford because I don't know how to tell them grief. It's just was a mess.
Yeah.
And I just was in my car, just like the weight of it. And I just started like having chest pain, and I could like feel my heart beating and my ears were ringing. I just was like, it was crazy. It was a physiological response that everything became so overwhelming in my body that I don't know how to explain it. My brain broke. I felt like I needed to kill myself. Like the only way I've ever, it's not a good analogy, but the only way I've ever been able to explain this to people is like, I felt like I had to do it the way you feel like you need to come up from the swimming pool when you've been down for too long. Like I needed, my brain and my body said, you have felt too much pain and this is no longer tolerable and you need an exit from this. Like I didn't analytically, like I never wrote a note. In fact, I grabbed my gun and I was like, I felt like there was a force that was making me do it. I didn't want to. I was thinking about how much this was gonna damage my family, and I was like, well, that sucks. I'm one of those, like I'm doing that to them. Like it doesn't make sense rationally as I talk to you about it here, but in the car, I felt like I had no choice and I had to do it. It was very strange. So I have a lot of empathy. Like a lot of people will say somebody's selfish who kills himself. It's like your brain is so broken at that point. It's like, I would just caution people to have a lot of empathy for people who have been in that position, because I didn't want to. I felt like I had to. And I like wrestled with it. Like I was trying not to, like a force, like I said, like I was being forced to. And I was just thinking about how, what a shitty ending to my life and how sad my, what am I, I'm like, I love my kids so much. I'm gonna just damage them. So irreversible damage, but I got to, like, this is how I go out. And I put the gun in my mouth and I was just like, gonna do it. Like it was happening. I was no doubt in my mind. I was so sad about it. And I had my finger on the trigger and I caught my breath for a second. I just a deep breath. And like, I was out of a trance. Like I was able to break free of it felt like a trance. And like, I got the gun out of my mouth and I won this battle. And then my whole mentality shifted and it was like, whoa, like what? Like it's just the whole thing feels like I'm living somebody else's life. Like I looked at the gun, it felt like that was something or somebody who was attacking me. Like I threw it back in the glove box. Like that was the enemy and I couldn't get away from it fast enough. Like I was scared of it. I was a mess. My brain was entirely broken. None of this really makes sense, but this is what happened. No. So I threw the gun in the glove box. I couldn't get away from it fast enough. I launched myself out of my truck, landed on the concrete on my back. And then this is the third and final time. Sorry, talking about vomiting. I just rolled over and I started throwing up. This is what happens. If you don't cry, if you don't talk, if you don't purge your emotions, they come out. And whether you externalize them and projecting on your family, you internalize them, you cry, you vomit, the body's going to make you get rid of it. I was just throwing up and I just had a moment of deep connection with my creator, and I had the most heartfelt prayer I've ever had, and it was not a lengthy prayer like an Our Father. It was like, help me. I just kept, I'm in my mess. I'm on this parking lot in the middle of nowhere, and I'm just crying, and I'm just like, help me. Help me. Like, help me. I need to help. And I'm like, told God, I'm tapping out. I need your help. I don't know. I won't do that again, but I don't know how to not. I don't know how to fix what's going on in my house. I don't know how to cope with this.
Yeah.
Just help me. And I called Brandley. I don't know if you know Brandley Williams. He's one of our captains, and he lives by me, and he's just one of my buddies. He's an odd bird.
Okay.
But he's the kindest, most gentle, caring human being I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, bro, I just almost killed myself. Can I go to your house? Give you my gun? And he's like, yeah, of course. And I've sat with him through some struggles with his... He had some challenges with his kids. We have the type of dynamic where we can do this sort of thing. You need it.
Yeah.
You need somebody who you can do this with, bro. If you don't already have somebody, I'll be that person for you if you don't.
Oh.
And I said, so I drove to his house. I said, I don't feel any compulsion to use this thing, but I don't know what's up or down right now. You know, can you take this?
Mm-hmm.
And I just hugged him and we cried together, you know, and like, that's really important. And, it was just like we sat in it together, you know, and I left his house and I called a counselor who I had seen several years before this, and I said, because a few years before this, like maybe 8 years before this, I had my other dog died and my grandma died within the same week, and another friend of mine overdosed, and I got into some counseling, but I was doing good since then. And but I called Mike. I said, I know you haven't seen probably 8 years. I left him a voicemail. I said, I'm in a crisis. Can you see me or can you point me in the right direction? We talked about mental health at the fire department. We didn't talk about it then. Like, I don't know what EAP was or not. Like, we didn't have any of that. And we've changed a lot in the last few years. It's good now. Yeah. It's better. And he called me right back and he said, I can see you tomorrow. And I got home and cleaned myself up. I had like throw up on me. And I sat with my wife on the front porch. We have a swing out there that used to be my favorite spot, but now it is again. But at the time, it just wasn't getting used. And I said, we're a mess. Like, I just almost killed myself. And you're drinking too much. And our kids are struggling. Like, we need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting help. I'm going tomorrow to get help. I don't know what that looks like, but I've reached out. I've told people I'm getting help. And she said, I've been wanting to get help too. God. And I've been looking into a rehab facility. And this was like May. She's a teacher. She has summers off. She said, I've already been calling this place called The Meadows and they can see me. And like, because we had spent so much on medical costs, our deductible had been met. She's like, it's actually not, it's going to be affordable.
Nice.
And I have an intake set up. I'll set it up this week. And that was like, that's the hardest part of the story, by the way. Mm-hmm. It starts to get really good from here on out. But that was rock bottom. That was where we began the healing process. Can we time out? I got to blow my nose.
Yes, I was going to say, babe, can you get us both?
Thank you for sharing space for that. I'm sorry. I know it's a hard story to listen to.
No, I'm not trying to be, it's almost a beautiful story in a sense where it's just like, you know, when you say you breathe, I interpret things visually.
Oh, thank you, brother.
Yep. Sorry, it's toilet paper.
No, that's actually, this is actually what it's I like, use at home.
Okay,
I don't like tissues. I'm like,
thank you.
Yes, I'm like, I actually, this is my go-to as well. Thank you, Aaron. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Well, I'm always visual. Like, I think of things, you say I'm ridiculous for this, but like, and I don't want to take any away from what your story is, but like when you say you sat there and you breathe, and to me, I'm a visual person. I felt the Holy Spirit just coming. Like, I felt God just, you were breathing him in that moment.
Yes.
And it was just,
it's a beautiful way of putting it.
He was just giving you that beat before you, to me, the devil or just everything.
Yes.
You know, and how you rejected that gun with that was to you in that moment. I always think of it like that. Like, it's just, evil, but at the same time, it was real for you.
Yeah.
It's not like to judge you or anything, but it's like, I felt like God was like, okay, I'm coming in. If you take it or leave it.
There was spiritual warfare going on in my car for sure.
Oh, 100%. For sure. And I'm sure you, and just, you know, flinging from your car and being like thrown from your car. I know like you do it, but it's like you had to get away from that being or whatever that was. I don't know what it was. It could have just been everything that would have had happened to you, but it just, anyone used to, when the moment you said, I just breathed in, I inhaled.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, God was kind of maybe just saying, okay, take me for a second.
Yes.
See what your options are.
But yes. Yeah. I love the way you put that. I believe it to be true. 100%.
Oh, that's a, well, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah. You're an amazing person. Wow. I mean, and I know my husband, my husband just loves you.
Well,
and
thank
I know
you. Likewise, bro.
Yes, he does. He speaks so highly of
you.
Thank you. And I know you wanted, he's off camera, everybody, but he's the grip today.
My question was, I kind of wish I could be in the mix, but
you will be, babe. Don't worry.
No, but I was curious, what do you think, when you got to that place, and I'm listening to your story, and then I had a panic attack during COVID, when all of our whole world was falling apart and we were losing everything. And then I had this moment in the car because I had to drive for Uber. Whatever. So I'm sitting here hearing you talk about it, and I'm finding a relation through what I experienced. I didn't go that far, but I can totally relate to everything that you're saying. That's why it touched me so much. But I'm what do you tell people that are deep in it right now? They're feeling what you're feeling right now. They're in it. You know, they're in the freaking cave right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How do you address that?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the hardest ones to answer because I take a lot of it on when I'm experiencing somebody asking me that, and I can't do much necessarily, but the things that I have found to be helpful or effective is, first of all, sitting with them and letting them know, if you're available, the last thing you need to be told is what you're doing wrong or what you could do more in that case to help, but to be told that you're not alone, and I'll sit with you in this, bro, if you'll allow me, we can share space in this, whether that means stepping out and watching a Dave Chappelle comedy special to disassociate together, or whether that means sitting here crying and hugging on each other, or whether that just means sitting in an awkward silence so you don't have to sit in these feelings alone, because you're gonna have to feel it to heal it, and these feelings are very uncomfortable for us to feel.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
And when, now it's easy. This is therapy for me. I'm actually happy we're talking about it. You need to process and walk through it occasionally.
Yeah.
But at the time, we don't do that. Yeah. And so we lock it all up. And it's like the check engine light is going off in our brain. And it's it makes the car break down and stop going because it's overheating. And so I share with people, you got to try to meet people where they're at and just let them know, probably what you're going through is exceptionally intense. And if you're looking for a problem solve, I do have some meditative tools or some ways to help you out of that. Or if you're looking for a homie to go distract you and go have fun. Like for me, I didn't want to go have fun. I wanted to isolate. I wanted to be quiet. If you're open for it, I'm here to listen. If you want to talk, if you don't, can I share space and silence with you? Those are, and same thing with your kids when they're going through it. Whether it's a brother who's deeply in the thick of it, or whether it's a kid who's going through a meltdown.
Yeah.
How can I help? Can I sit with you in this?
Yeah.
You're not alone. What you're going through, validate what you're going through is so painful and so hard, and I see it, but also you will get through it and you don't have to do it alone. Like, whatever you need, I'll sit with. A lot of times when that happens, I go out with the dudes and I just sit with them, and sometimes they talk, sometimes they don't, and it's scary for me because I'm afraid they're going to kill themselves, and, mm-hmm. and I'm not a crisis counselor. I've been in that position a couple of times and I don't like it. I'm not actually equipped for it, to be honest with you. Like, mm-hmm. but a lot of times I'm not going to turn a phone call down and these guys aren't going to call a therapist. But that's kind of why I'm doing what I'm doing now, is I'm hoping to prevent us from ever getting to that place. But mm-hmm. to answer your question, that's kind of what I do, is I just reach out and with all of my being, let them know I'm not just saying like, oh, I'm here for you, bro. Like, that's a different thing than like, bro, I'm here with you. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what you're going through, but like, let's go through it together if you want. And if you don't want me to, I'm not going to force myself on you. But like, you don't have to go through this alone. And it's shocking how like, I'm a pretty small dude, like a guy who's like jacked like you, big, intimidating guy. Dude, sometimes that makes them break down and they cry. And then I'll share with them like, this is good. Keep doing this, please. Like, I'm not going to tell anybody about this, and you need this, and I'm here for this. Like, and you know, like, just offering presence and empathy. And then if they are looking for tools, sometimes they do want to problem solve. Like, I'm having a panic attack. Dude, let me walk you through how to breathe, how to ground, how to redirect your thoughts. Like, I love that. But a lot of times in the crisis is not the time for the tools. That's kind of just the time to like, sit with them in it, or you know. Yeah. So does that answer your question? It's a tough one to answer because I don't think there is a great answer, and I'm not necessarily the person who's equipped to solve that. I'm not a therapist, you know what I mean? So but I've been there and I can offer empathy and what worked for me.
That might work more for people than sometimes the therapist might. Sometimes I would imagine that someone who's been there too,
yeah,
you know, especially another dude. Like, a lot of times, yes. like, we need to kind of model for each other how to do that, and that it's okay to do that, and that I've been there and done that. And yeah. I'm a proponent of therapy, but the reality is, for it to work, you need to connect with your therapist. And a lot mm-hmm. of therapists haven't sat on the tailboard of a firehouse or been through the razzing or the hazing or whatever our life experience is. Or a lot of guys aren't willing to go get therapy. So I mm-hmm. think the next best thing is we can cultivate an environment mm-hmm. where we support each other and where we have the tools to do so. And so that's kind of my mission right now.
Well, to piggyback off that, like, do you think, and maybe I'm wrong, do you think that God was maybe setting you up for this being your purpose?
I don't think it. I know it.
You know it. I know okay, it. Good. I didn't want to misjudge that one.
More than I've ever known anything in my entire life.
Oh my gosh.
To the deepest being in my core.
I can feel it. Yeah. Yes. I mean, that's how I interpret it when you're telling me this story, is that this is maybe your true calling to go through that. And I always say to him, I can't. He's only been on what, for three? Not only, it's been 3 years. That's been quite a bit of time. But I tell him, like, I don't know how you process the things you see. And you, when you were. Can you, when we get to your interview when we do yours, we'll do yours separately, but this is a question. How do you process the things that you see going in as a first responder? I can't even hear the things that he comes home and says that he has to see. Because I say, you guys are the first to respond to everything. So you're there, and 2 seconds after it happens, you're the first one seeing with your own eyes. You can be the biggest macho guys, and yeah, we lift all day, and but at the end of the day, you're still human.
Of course.
I don't think any training in the fire department trains you to process a lot of this stuff.
Until now,
but just at least, and you guys do a great job of getting help. Like, I love that, but I'm just saying, it's just...
Well, I'll tell you, culturally, the fire department is resistant to this. I'm really mad about it, to be honest.
Really?
With you. Like, okay. I've been working with, I ran through the whole fire department, and now mm-hmm. I've been running through the police department. Mm-hmm. The police officers are like ready, open, willing, and wanting to hear it. Both areas are a pressure cooker. The firemen are sitting through the class, and some of them are opening up, but I cannot even tell you how many people are not comfortable opening up and then calling me afterwards.
Yeah.
And then I'm pretty pissed off that we have an environment that where we still culturally can't quite accept it. We mm-hmm. had in fact, can I circle back, because anybody mm-hmm. who's listening mm-hmm. didn't get to hear the like rainbow after the rain, because it was so nasty what I went through.
Go, yes.
And it became so beautiful.
I want to hear the
and
rainbow.
I got to share that
go,
part of
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, and I can I can
yeah.
be concise on
yeah.
it. My wife went to 3 months of outpatient facility while she was gone learning all about her dysfunctional childhood and trauma mm-hmm. and being, she's sober, all mm-hmm. that stuff. She was gone. I would take my kids to therapy. I would do my own therapy. We would do, I nerded out. I've got every book on children's emotional regulation and grief processing. And okay. I was learning all about my emotions while teaching my kids. Then she would come home and we would talk about what we met. And we spent, oh, I'm gonna cry talking about it again. We mm-hmm. spent the whole summer healing and taking a crash course PhD mm-hmm. school of hard knocks. Nice. I know so much about emotional regulation okay. and how to, all that. How can I help sit with it? Processing everything you mm-hmm. asked me, like, your answer is we don't.
Yeah.
But also I do now, and my kids sure do.
Yeah.
And we label our emotions and we put narratives to our story and we support each other and mm-hmm. we do empathetic listening and mm-hmm. we know we do a lot of mindfulness exercises, so we know when we're feeling anger or embarrassment mm-hmm. or shame what that looks like and how to process it. I didn't know any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I started reintroducing myself to my friends who I had withdrawn from, mm-hmm. like Wes and Bramley and all those guys, and then I started opening up and kind of sharing what happened to me, and a lot of people I was embarrassed by. I'm not embarrassed, I'm not ashamed of what mm-hmm. happened to me now.
Yeah.
I was at the time though. Okay. Nobody talked about this back then.
Yeah.
And the first person that said me too, I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then another person saying, my wife's going through this too, and so and so almost killed himself too, and this guy's in crisis too, and this guy's yeah. and I was like, oh, we got a problem. And now, like, I could tell you every statistic on why we don't talk about this.
No,
so I didn't
you
know
don't.
But yeah. people are talking about it. Yeah. CDC's calling for action because of it, like yeah. but it's so stupid.
Yeah.
I'll get into that in a minute on mm-hmm. what, but like I started telling people at the fire department, like, we got to talk about this more, guys.
Yeah.
Like, and then kind of know, like, my friends were interested, but like admin and all this, like different mm-hmm. admin, you know, nobody was really. So then I was like, I'll start a podcast. So I started a mm-hmm. podcast, and I started Instagram, and I started wrote this book, and I ended up cultivating these relationships and doing all this stuff, mm-hmm. connecting with mental health facilities and creating resilience programs and all that stuff. And then my family, dude, my kids, my daughter, who was so dysfunctional and emotionally dysregulated, she ended up getting a diagnosis of sensory processing disorder. So like of all these diagnoses we had from all these doctors that I just didn't quite feel
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
We got called to school one day and they had a new school, not as counselor, she's like a doctor. I don't remember what she is, a specialist. Mm-hmm. Like, and she said, like, hey, have you ever noticed that Sophie has these outbursts after the fire alarm, or like one was when a kid dropped a lunch tray next to her, or like the power struggles you're having at home, like she doesn't want to put on her socks because she says she doesn't like the way they feel, and then you guys are fighting. Well, it turns out I had never even heard of sensory processing mm-hmm. disorder, but it's kind of like a lot of kids who have, she doesn't have autism, she's like meets like normal social benchmarks, mm-hmm. but like the way, you know, you see kids like earphones, they don't like, mm-hmm. We took her to a specialist, this neurology specialist, and he's like, oh yeah, 10 out of 10 criteria. Like that's exactly what she has going on.
Yeah.
So loud noises or different things,
wow.
send her into fight or flight. She rages up and then, or runs away. That's why she was either running away from school or fighting with the teachers or us. Then her nervous system regulates and she's embarrassed and feels shame by what
yeah.
she went through. And so we just like started, she got advance notice on fire alarms, we got his headphones, all of a sudden the chaos was like gone. And now the doc told us she may or may not grow out of it. She's pretty much grown out of it now. So
yeah.
it was like but now it wasn't her emotions and our trauma, it was that. But because we did all this work, she's like the guru at school. Like kids go to her for like she knows how to teach her kids how to emotionally regulate. She is so introspective and wise.
Gosh.
My son too, like my kids were floundering, like to God
yeah.
flipped that.
Yeah.
They're so well, they know they're feeling, like mm-hmm. all this stuff that I dealt with, they're never going to deal with. They know exactly
yeah.
how to hold boundaries, how, like all
yeah.
this therapy stuff.
Yeah.
Like we immersed ourselves in it. My wife is so freaking healthy and aware. Like
mm-hmm.
we are so happy and healthy now. And we've had, continued to have losses and stuff. But like,
mm-hmm.
man, we know how to process grief. We know how to support
yeah.
each other, all this stuff. So like, we are thriving now.
That's amazing.
And then like now, and then so like for anybody who was hanging with that, a lot of people
yeah.
have a visceral reaction to my
yeah.
story. Like
yeah.
I thought it was over for everybody.
Yeah.
And so like anybody who's looking for some hope in the darkness right now,
yeah.
I would have never imagined like that we would be doing what we're doing. And that honestly, my stop in the fire department was a little blip on the radar to get me here. This was what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
I was relatively influential while I was there. I'd rather not even speak on that because I don't want to sound egotistical. But if you ask people, some people didn't like me because that's the fire service, but like
yeah.
Dude, I'm good friends with our chief and all the chiefs. Mm-hmm. Like, I socialize with them, but I have not lost respect from the boots on the ground. Like, I keep people call me with confidential stuff. Mm-hmm. I had a pretty good approval rating there. And I think I had a hand in some positive change in people's lives. I have like way more influence now than my phone is like 24/7 crisis response and guidance and friendship. And like, I'm doing way more on the job now than I thought I was going to be a captain and be influencing my crew. Exactly. And it's like, people may or may not talk about it because it's taboo, but like, we're having some dialogue right now. Good. And it's changing things, and it's slower than I would like. Yeah. But it's like, I save every message. I have a special folder, like everywhere.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Or somebody says I help them, I screenshot it. I don't mm-hmm. show it to anybody, but like, yeah. That folder is getting sense. Big. And it's like, it's not an ego thing. I'm so thankful that what I went through is turning into that, you know?
Something
and,
positive, yeah.
Yeah, so it's beautiful now. Yes. And it was very dark and it was very painful. Yeah. And that is my message to people you ask who are in crisis. This is temporary. It doesn't feel like it. It's so big and so overwhelming, but you have to weather the storm and you have to reach out for help and you have to breathe through it and you have to believe that God creates seasons for things. And sometimes it's a season of long suffering, but there is a season of joy and brighter days ahead on the other side of this. And in the meantime, we don't have to go through this alone, but like, it is temporary. Mm-hmm. Breathe. You will get through it. Yeah. And there are brighter days ahead, even when it feels like there's not, even in the heat of the biggest adversity, even when you lose everything, you can get through it. And it's not going to be like this forever. I think, you know, so that was my tangent. I'm sorry. I wanted to circle back. You had asked something.
No, I love that.
I just wanted to share that. Like, we're doing good now.
I mean,
for anybody who, you know, like,
it's and that was, that was the end of the story. I'll make sure.
My kids are doing well. They're happy. Yeah. They're healthy. Like, it doesn't happen to everybody. Thank God. Praise Jesus. But like, they are, you know?
Sorry. Well, you know, what do you see yourself now? Where do you see your life heading to now? What are the next steps for your life? What do you want to write more? Do you want to open your own facility? Do you want to, because I do think there's something missing in a sense, and your department is amazing, and I won't, with the help, they go on crazy calls and immediately they're like, do you need, you know, they're asking him, do you need counseling, do you need this, do you need that, but where do you see yourself going? Do you find that this is what you're going to do for the rest of your life?
Yes.
Until you,
well, I mean, I don't want to plan that far ahead.
Retire
I could do this forever. That's the thing about this type of work. I don't put a lot of thought into it. I felt very, I look at God like he's my coach. Put me in, coach.
Yeah.
You tell me the play you want me to run.
Yeah, 100%.
And Forrest Kuntz, who's our wellness chief, or I don't know what his position is, but he does our wellness stuff. This is a friend of mine. You know, he's my friend. He maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago, he called and asked if I would speak to our department. Mm-hmm. And I did kind of what I did today in front of the department. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I had gone back. I hadn't gone back to the city. I drove back and I could feel all those feelings. It was, I didn't know how the message would be received. It was real like now it's easier for me, but I got up and I shared and it wasn't very formal. I didn't have I just shared like I did today. And then Mike Payne asked me for some tools and I kind of shared some tools. And then he took me out to lunch afterward that talk. And he was like, can you put this into formal training? We need this. And then a few other people asked me to do that. And that's when I connected with some mental health facilities to make sure everything I was saying was legally good and evidence-based. And I created the app and I turned it into a training program of everything that I wish, 'cause a lot of this can be prevented, by the way.
Yeah.
and I've, if we have time, this is a long interview, I'd like to get into a little bit of that too. But like,
100%.
At that time, I felt God calling me. I listened to my father when he talks to me, okay? Yeah. And we have discernment and stuff, but like, it wasn't an option. Like, I needed to create formal training, and I needed to go speak to people on this stuff. And I got these professional studio and these videos, and I did all these exercises. I got in touch with the person who helped create the Calm app, that one of the best meditation teachers in the country helped me facilitate this and do all this stuff. I put together this training. My department hired me. Now I'm working at other departments and stuff too. Right now, what, that message was very clear that I needed to do that. It, like, I knew it would be successful. I knew I needed to do it because, and success can be, could be just one person. I don't care. You 100%. Know, one person who was like me being reached and being given those tools. That's one person whose little babies don't lose their dad.
Yeah.
You know, one person matters. That when I, the bar I set for when I walked into Surprise was, if I reach one of my brothers, it's so, I'm so far past that bar now. Like, I was good with one. If one person needs to hear this or it will use these tools. Because you're not going to get guys to do this stuff and take, like, right away. Like, the cops are wanting it. The firemen are very resistant towards it. It's very strange, by the way. But I can tell you why that is, too. Okay. But either way, one was good, and we're way past one now.
Yeah.
And right now, I don't, to answer your question, I don't feel like God is calling me to do anything other than I'm busier than I can keep up with right now. I'm being flown out to Texas to speak at a conference in May. I'm being, the 100 Club has recruited me to do some talks.
Awesome.
Other departments want to work with me. I'm still filtering my way through Surprise PD. I landed a literary agent, so we got the book publishing stuff going on. I have so much stuff going on. So right now what I feel like
is, you're good.
Well, I feel like what I'm doing, honestly, is this is my favorite place to be with God is, you know, when we try and control things and plan things, he laughs, and also we grip onto an outcome of something. My only job right now is to do whatever he wants me to do with this. And I feel like I'm back at the fire station. Like, you show up at the fire station, you don't know what, if you're going to have a shutout or if you're going to run 10 calls and what that call is. It could be an awesome house fire, rarely, or it could be picking up an old person, right? Like, but you don't know. But you show up to work and you're like, okay, I'm here for 48 hours. I'm going to do whatever I need to do. The training calendar says I need to do this. The calls come in. So, like, I wake up every day and I'm like, what do you need me to do? Like, okay, well, I'm training at the police department today. Okay, I'm taking a call from this guy who's in crisis today. I'm doing this podcast episode. I'm letting his masterpiece unfold, and I'm hoping that I'm a vehicle for what he wants to get done out of this. And I think I am, and I have nothing to do with any of it. It's him.
Yeah.
And it's a privilege to have his work go through me to help my brothers and sisters and other parents who don't know how to speak to their kids during emotional struggles, or who are tempted, or whose marriages are falling apart, or who don't know how to process, or who think they can't because our environment tells them they can't. It's such bullshit, excuse my language. And he's not happy with what's going on in the fire service right now, and his people are hurting, and he's allowing me to help them through this. And so I'm just showing up and saying, put me in, coach, what's the play today? And that's what, to answer your question, that's what it is.
Oh, that's amazing. Awesome. I love
Thanks, brother.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is it just for first responders? Or do you touch other people? I can tell you, I went through anxiety. I mean, especially moving to a new state and so much, but even women who almost die giving birth.
Yeah.
I have post-traumatic stress. I don't talk about that. And it just, he knows that. I mean, it's not horrible, but I know it's there, you know? And so, you know, even like somebody like me, I'm like, I'm good. Like, I'm tough. I've done all this and blah, blah. But then there are times where I'm like, oh my gosh, I have anxiety. Why do I have anxiety? I'm going just to the store. Or I'm like, where is this coming from, Sarah? You've traveled the world. Yeah. You've gone to other countries. You know, it's like you've lived in New York for 20 years almost. Like, how all of a sudden is driving giving me this? And it's just maybe because I've never dealt with things in my past that were traumatic to me, like almost dying, giving birth to our son. Moving to a new state, just kind of my husband being a firefighter now, gone for 2 nights.
Yes.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
And it's not to make it about me, but I'm just like wondering if your services, or do you direct people who aren't necessarily immediately first responders, but either like the arms of the first, you know, their wives, or even if they have no relation to first respondering.
I'm coining that term.
So yeah, I was just wondering if you do that. Yeah.
Well, what you went through is a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we try and talk ourselves out of these feelings because of how tough we are. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that you are very clearly tough, and you both are very tough, and you can have a really awesome car, it doesn't mean that the tire pressure can't be low or the oil temperature can't be too hot. And we talk ourselves out of like that. That's that, those indicators go off. Your body is feeling anxiety, or your mind, or you drive somewhere and you start to panic and you go, well, I'm too tough for this.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, also you're a human being and nearly dying during childbirth must be, I can't even imagine how traumatic that is. And none of us have the tools to like tell our inner child like, hey, you went through something. Mm-hmm. It's okay to cry about this, or to write a letter to your deceased loved ones and cry those tears, or talk to somebody or share. And so it doesn't mean you're not tough just because you have emotions and trauma, and you might and your body might be telling you that you need to process it. You're very tough, clearly, to have survived all of that.
Yeah.
But that's yet to answer your question. Yeah. So on the 17th, I'm doing the same training, but modified for spouses and kids that are age appropriate enough to hear these types of topics.
Yeah.
And so, and then my wife is meeting with the spouse group as well to kind of share her version of the journey and how we've done these tools, because the whole world needs this stuff. All human beings do. Mm-hmm. But you got to kind of like reach who wants to listen to you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I have a broader audience. Like my Instagram blew up like crazy. That's how it started. I've kind of stepped away from it because I've been so busy with this. That's like, I started the podcast, I wrote the book, and I was like, all right, well, if the fire department doesn't want to hear this, like I'll tell everybody else. And that blew up because a lot of dudes want to hear this, or a lot of like moms wanted to hear it for their sons to teach. Like it, I kind of stepped away from it, but it grew fast. I honestly don't like social media. I'm uncomfortable with how big it is. And I'm losing followers right now, and most people freak out when that happens. And every time it happens, I'm like, okay, good. But like the book publisher kind of the literary agent didn't want to take me on until I had a large Instagram presence. And so I had to grow it, and it can't be bots. It has to be real people. Yeah. And so I didn't have this job that I have now where like, so I was like, this is how I'm going to put food on the table. I'm going to teach people how to meditate. I'm going to run this pod. Like, so then it grew. And then now I'm like doing what I think God is calling me to do and what I want to do. And so I'm still kind of on there. Of course, it's a good place to connect with people. But like every time I had a reel go viral, I felt very uncomfortable with that amount of eyes on me. And then you get like haters and all that. It's just like, it's a bunch of noise that
it's
I don't
need. It's high school.
And I never had social media. Box. So I had a fast from social media. I didn't even have an Instagram account. Yeah. And so I started it. And then everybody kind of told me it's going to be impossible to grow. And then it grew real fast. Yeah. And like, so either way, I don't know. People need it. And I share on there, and I share on the podcast. But the reality is I have the ear of the first responders right now, and especially here in the Valley and a little bit outside of the state. But I'm trying to hit it holistically. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely I'm pushing the fire department, the police department. I guess the communication is.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Challenging with the spouses, but get the word out. Mm-hmm. Like I will share with them these types of dialogues that I'm having with their husbands and wives, and how, you know, I don't know how, there's a lot of communication that we don't get taught. You come home from 2 days of being away and you ran a drowning call, and you come home and your wife has been with the kids for 2 days. That's not fair either, right? And so you get there and like, we don't have like the skills to say like, hey, I ran a really rough call and I was up all night.
Yeah.
I could really use a nap, but also I want to help you out. What was the best part and the worst part of your day?
Yeah.
Okay, well, our son did X, Y, or Z and I'm exhausted too. Okay, well, we can't fill both of our cups and both of our needs can't get met. Let's talk a little bit about how we could compromise and teamwork this. It's more like one of us does the honey-do list or the husband just ignores it and we stack up resentments and now we're drinking and divorcing. That's our culture. And so...
Really?
Yes. Maybe not you guys, thank goodness, but yeah, 100%. Dude, it's nuts.
I can see that. I mean, I don't want to cut you, but we go through... I could say I'm pretty okay. Like, I'm like, do you need a nap? Go take a nap. He'll sometimes say, I don't need a nap. I'm like, go take a nap. Like, go lay down.
That might not be the norm. That's awesome. Well, but also, you have been struggling for 2 days, too.
Yeah.
So, it's not a, it's not an either or. Like, I get my needs or yours. It's a yes and. We're both in this together.
Yeah.
He needs a nap.
Yeah.
But, like, maybe if you have a new baby at home, like, for 2 days, the dog in the house and the baby, that's not good either.
No.
And so, to just, like, rather than, like, what you said is awesome because you guys love each other. So, you're like, you're taking a nap. And you're like, no, I'll watch the kiddo, you get rest.
Oh, we've had our fights.
Of course, we all do. But like, the job presents unique stressors to couples that we don't really talk about how to communicate. And like, you guys very clearly have deep love and a spiritual connection. And I like, that's not necessarily the norm. A lot of people weren't, like, nobody taught me how to communicate. I had no premarital classes. My wife and I got together when we were 16 and we were kind of like latchkey kids. Nobody taught us anything. So like figuring it out on our own when the SHIT hit the fan is not easy. So yeah, like, I like to get the spouses in there. They're coming to the auditorium. I'm going to share that. And then my wife is, she's even talked about, she's going to meet with the spouse group and share her journey. But she's like, we'll see if they want it, but like, I'll create some workshops. Like, we can we can go meet up and like, you know, do the same thing that I do with the guys, but with the gals.
Yeah.
She's a teacher. She could do it during the summers or whatever. But so yeah, I'll talk to anybody who needs these tools, or I'll listen to anybody who just needs me to share space with them. But right now, it's busy with the public safety stuff. So that's kind of where the audience is at.
That's amazing. I love that. So, does God talk to you?
Yes.
I mean, do you hear God? We've asked this of most of our guests. And what does that sound like, his voice to you, if it's even a voice?
It's not a voice, but God speaks to me so loudly that I'll share honestly with you, but I feel like most people will think I'm crazy. I very rarely share this with almost anybody. Even it's the thing that I cherish the most in this planet is my relationship with God.
That's amazing.
And how he communicates with me. And I feel it so deeply. All right, so can I? Do we have time for me to tell you a story? It's way better for me to give you a couple
of
examples.
Go for it. I love stories. Yeah, okay. Go for it.
So after everything got better, I like this singer, Michael Franti. Like he, the way he does music is he talks about feelings a lot. And I've always gone to his concerts. Wes Branley and Gilbert are three guys who we've always gone to concerts together. Like, they like different music and we all go to each other's concerts and it's kind of like our little informal therapy. And they know that like my favorite music is Michael Franti because it's like, it's almost like worship music. It's not secular. It's secular, but it's like he gets into the feelings and people in the crowd like sing and dance, but like you kind of get have an emotional experience when you listen to his music. And it's just always kind of been my go-to. And after everything became okay, he put on a cruise with like all these singers and musicians that I like. And then instead of like bingo or whatever you do on the cruise ship during the day, it's like trauma healing workshops. There's like yoga and therapy and writing workshops. And so the guys and I went on this cruise afterwards because I was like feeling okay and everything was good and they wanted to support me in it. So they're like, and they love the music too. And we went on this cruise ship, and like a few weeks before you got on the cruise, one of the workshops that they were doing was this TEDx style workshop. They had this professional company who trains people to do TED Talks and TEDx's is going to put on this big public speaking thing. And you can, there's three spots for it. It's going to be one of the main events on the boat. And you can, you the qualifiers are, you have to be willing to spend like X amount of time learning to publicly speak, all these Zoom lessons and all this stuff. And you have to be willing to authentically and vulnerably share a triumph over trauma story. And to this point in my journey, besides a few friends, I had not shared what I shared with you all today, that I had nearly killed myself or any of that actually. It was still under wraps. I was like coming out of it and some of my friends knew, but I hadn't started speaking to the firemen. I hadn't talked to anybody. And when God told me I needed to put into that talk, for that talk, this is how God speaks to me. I feel it's so loud. It's a compulsion or a thought to do something that I feel like I'm going to get in trouble if I don't do it. Like, dad's talking and I need to listen, like including things I don't want to do, like put in for a public speaking talk to share about my trauma. Like I told Leslie, like, it's not a voice. I don't hear from a burning bush, but like, the way if an old person fell down in front of me, I know I need to help pick them up.
Yeah.
It's like he makes me do things that like I have free will. I couldn't do it, but like, do you ever sit in a storm and see who that I'm not messing with dad. All right. When he tells me I need to do something, I listen.
Yeah.
And like, he put it on my heart so heavy that I needed to do this that I told my wife, like, God is making me put in for this talk and I don't want to do it. Yeah. I've never publicly, now I publicly speak all the time.
That
this
terrifies me. Yeah.
I never publicly spoke. 500 people is the audience. It's on the Broadway stage on the boat. Like they train you up and you got to get intimate with it. And she's like, well, they said only 3 people are signing up and they've already had 300 people put in for it. Like, maybe you won't get it or whatever. I'm like, watch. I know what when dad's speaking, like, the people know this story, but they don't know it the way I'm going to tell it to you. Mm-hmm. But like, because again, like when you're kind of really in tune to spirituality, people get skeptical. Even other Christians, I don't really like, you know, it was like, I was like, I'm going to get drawn for this. I guarantee it. He's telling me I have to do this. I don't know why. Yeah. I didn't know it was going to turn into this, by the way.
Yeah.
So I put in for it. And of course, they're like, 500 people have put in for this. I'm one of 3 who gets chosen for it, of course. So now I'm like, okay, this is crazy. I got to do this talk. Like, God, like, so then I get trained up and I start talking the way, you know how I cried today when I spoke with you? Well, imagine having never spoken about it. So this lady teaches me how to tell this long story in 15 minutes, the way they do TED Talks. And it's time to practice. And I'm practicing in my bathroom mirror and I cannot get through it. I cannot get through it. Snot, guttural pain in my stomach. I end up like, cause I'm walking through the pain my daughter and I went through, the pain my wife and I went through, my son, my own pain, like, it was, I couldn't get through it. Literally, I had a talk written that I was supposed to give in front of 500 people on this boat, all strangers. And I can tell God is telling me I have to do it. And I'm telling God, like, you want me to just go out there and embarrass myself in front of people? What are you doing with this? Mm-hmm. I'll listen to you, but like, I can't.
Yeah.
And so I called the TEDx lady and I was like, I can't do this talk. I can't even get through it in the mirror without crying like bad. And she's like, well, 500 people put in for this. We're 2 weeks away and I've trained you. You have to do this.
Yeah.
Like, this is a big event on this cruise ship and you committed to it. And she's like, tell it over and over and over again. The tears will dissipate. Like, I promise you, this is not my first time doing this. She was really cool. Colleen's her name.
Nice.
And for like 2 weeks straight, I said this talk over and over and over again until I could kind of get through it. And I still had like a freaking panic attack beforehand. And we got on the boat and I just like, I cannot explain to you how much, like I thought I was going on this cruise to listen to these bands who I liked and hang out with my friends because I had been like isolated for 5 years. I was on this cruise ship to give this talk. And so I got up there on stage and I shared for the very first time I ever told really anybody outside of my closest circle that I had a gun in my mouth and that my family fell apart was on a big Broadway stage with a microphone in front of 500 strangers and my favorite musician who I've been listening to for 10 years and all this stuff. It was nuts. Big curtain. It's like, I'd like, maybe if you're used to performing, like I know you've done, like I had never done anything even remotely close to that.
God was like, here you go.
Exactly. And so, but
you're not starting off small.
And it just was like amazing. Like
that's
I got
awesome.
Up there and I gave the talk and I'm looking around and people are laughing at the funny part. And then everybody in the audience is bawling. And I'm like, okay. And I just like, I did it. But then what happened was I didn't really get to even enjoy our time on the boat. I did enjoy it, but in a different way. Like I thought I was going to be doing yoga and concerts and stuff.
Everybody's probably coming up to
everybody. Like, and it was heavy. Like I ended up having to go back to my room and cry several times. It's overwhelming because there was like of the 2,000 people on the boat, 25%. There was a full house that were in there, and a lot of them were impacted by it. So like these guys were like, "This is crazy. We're just going to go do our own thing." I was talking to so many people, and I didn't know the impact my story would have. Mm-hmm. I thought, to be honest with you, I thought God was making me do it as like a therapy for myself. I didn't think I still at this moment. Mm-hmm. This is the moment I realized, like, oh, you're making me do something with this. I thought he wanted me to like do it for me to heal.
Yeah.
That's what I told my wife. Like, because you know, he doesn't talk to you. Like, I didn't really know what was going on. I knew I had to do this. And I thought he was making me be brave and tell my story so that I could move forward in life. I didn't realize it was like,
he was using you.
He was using me.
Yeah.
And so the first lady comes up to me and she's like, oh man. She said, she's like in her 50s. She says, I'm a doctor. She said, you know, I came from an abusive dad, you know, and she's, and because I get into some of the stuff I did with my daughter with emotional regulation, and I kind of cried. She said, I hope you're, oh my God, I can't get through this. She goes, mm-hmm. I hope you're proud of the way you're parenting your daughter. Aww. I sure am. She yeah. said, I wish my dad would have loved me the way you love your daughter. I could see it. And she'd be hugged. And the next, there's three of these. Mm-hmm. The next one was a couple, and they said, our son died of suicide. Can we talk to you? Our son died of suicide. And we want to thank you for sharing. More people need to do that.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And then this other guy came up to me and said, hey bro, can I talk to you? And I said, of course. And that's like, I'm used to this by now. It's really weird. Like, I was like, there's all these musicians on the boat, Arrested Development's on there, Michael Franti, all these people are fans, and they're like wanting to, people are like coming after me as much as they're trying to see the musicians, yeah. but it's to talk to me about how my story impacted them. And this guy said, hey man, I was at your talk, you know, I wanted to share with you. And he said, my best friend is a firefighter, mm-hmm. and his son is also a firefighter, and his son is 22 years old, and he killed himself 2 months ago. And he said, I want to give you the challenge coin from his funeral. This guy's on a boat. This guy is probably the reason I was there. This guy is on a cruise ship, not knowing he's going to run into a firefighter who's going to talk at one of the events on the boat, who's going to speak on. He said, this guy's like a son to me. This is his best friend's son. And I was like, we're crying. And I'm like, I can't take this from you. Like, you don't get another one, and it's from the funeral, you know? And he's like, I insist, you know? And so I have it, obviously. And I got together with Cletus, and we sent him a couple of challenge coins too. I stay in touch with this guy. But like, this guy's carrying this around in his pocket on a cruise ship. That's how much he's wrestling with this. And he gave it to me. And then everywhere we went, just on an elevator, like, and so Steve Gilbert and Wes, they're like, people have been telling me I should write a book for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I never felt like it because my life sucked. And they were telling me, you're so inspiring for keeping on going. And like, till that moment, I didn't really feel like writing a book. I just felt like everything was really painful. And it was, and then, but like, I told the guys, I'm like, all right, I feel like now, and I don't feel like God is telling me, like, I need to start talking about this. I need to start writing. I need to start putting this out there. And like, he speaks very loudly to me, to the point where, like I said, if I feel like nothing makes me feel happier than when I'm unified and with him, and when he's telling me to do something, and almost always the most amazing things happen when he puts it in my heart and in my head, like it becomes an obsession. Like I feel like I can't do anything else, or like I will not be content, and I will feel like I'm disobeying my creator. But also it's not like under duress, it's always like stuff that is amazing and I'm thankful to do it, you know. And sometimes it's little, sometimes like when I was going through it, when I was still in my, I wasn't really in a position to be counseling anybody, I was at Spooner Physical Therapy, and I was still in my depression. I was getting worked on, and I was not like I am now. Like now I know my role is a helper. But there was like 20 people in the waiting room. It's a big physical therapy. And there was this probably like 75-year-old black woman. And she was just kind of like sitting there kind of like crying a little bit. And I'm looking around. The staff is not tending to her. Everybody's out there facing their phone. And like I'm watching this, and like I'm vulnerable right now in this moment. So I'm not really equipped to help other people. But like God put it on my heart, like you need to go talk to this lady. And so I just went over and I knelt down and got on her level, like I was on the fire truck. And I said, are you okay? And she just started sobbing. She said, no, I'm new here. I don't know anybody. I hurt my knee and they can't figure out what's going on. And I can't walk and I just lost my job because of it. And it was just this thing. And we just, I asked the Spooner, can we get some tissues, please? And we just like, it had a moment, and then afterwards, like, we got our physical therapy, and she said, can I give you a hug? Like, I was desperate when you came and talked to me, and it made me feel so much better. Like, God tells me to do stuff, I listen. It's how he talks to me is, like, I can't explain it other than, like, I know what I have to do, and I don't really have a choice other than to do it. And the only thing I have to do is let go of any outcome or any desire of how I want it to look, and I just have to show up and tend to business the best I can and hope that I get it right and know that if I don't, he's gonna make it okay, you know, because I'll screw it up if it's left to me, you know.
Oh my gosh, that's beautiful. Oh my gosh. That is beautiful. I mean, I just, obviously it's just so real that God is using you. He's working with you for bigger things. Yes, 100%. I mean,
it's a privilege. I feel very thankful. Like the fact that God is willing to, not everybody gets to feel the Spirit like
it's
that.
It's not like, not why me, but why not you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I wouldn't want to not have this connection. Yeah. And do you know who Toby Mac is?
He's
like a Christian artist.
Yes.
But he's like, it's like hip hop roots, and it's like he's one of the only people who can cross over into mainstream and do worship. Like, it's good music.
Okay.
Even if you don't care about like stroking Jesus's beard. My friend Matt's a pastor, and he calls it like soft worship music. He's like, we don't do like Jesus stroking beard worship. Like, he's like, we got to do like worship that's going to get like the young folks hopping or whatever. It's like real music. Like, if you hear it, you wouldn't even, unless you listen to the lyrics, you wouldn't, it's good. And my daughter and I just went to his concert the other day,
fun.
And like watching her, she feels it like I do. Like, she feels the Spirit like I do. And it's like watching her, and like, it's not like I don't make her go to church or pray. Like, she feels it the way I do. And it's awesome. And I feel very lucky. I don't know why God speaks to me. Or maybe I'm crazy and we're all wrong and he doesn't. You're not going to convince me that's the case.
I don't think that's
if you're watching this and you're not a believer, like, it sounds crazy.
No.
Objectively, if you, like, when I was an agnostic who wasn't churched, and I grew up in a very, very kind of anti-church environment, 20-year-old me would have said, listen to this lunatic, delusional lunatic. Maybe. I don't think so, though.
No, I mean, we've all had our journeys back. I mean, we're Catholic, but it's like we separated, obviously, when we did our careers, moving to New York. You're a young adult. You want to go after your... But I was in a very dark place, too, and I've told my story a million times, but it was really bad, and something called me and said, you need to come back home, and that was God.
Yes.
And so I went back to church, and that changed my life, I mean, dramatically. And, you know, met my future husband, and you know, we had our child and all that kind of stuff, so it went full circle. So that's kind of where this came from. And so then again, kind of like you, my story turned into, all right, you were on TV, and oh yeah, you have this career, but I think the most important part of it was you were in a really dark place that maybe a lot of women or young men had gone through, and you came out on the other side of your faith again and being reintroduced to God. And I was able to talk about it on a larger platform, terrified, but then this kind of formed after all that. And it's just like, again, having you on and having other people on to share their stories. And I think evangelizing is the most important thing people can do. You can't force anybody. You can't say you have to believe in God. I can't. I have plenty of friends and people in the industry that just probably laugh at me, and they're just so not about this, which is fine. They're like, what happened to you, Sarah? But it's evangelizing. It's telling your story.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you can do. And we cannot control anybody else and what they believe or what path they're going to take. But hopefully it hits one or two, three people that say, gosh, what's your story?
Yeah.
And what's this direction you're in? Because I'm not in a good place. And I've had so many people say that to me. So I'm
proud of you for all of that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing that.
Well, you are so inspiring. And I just want to keep following you in your journey.
What you just said, that's inspiring.
Thank you.
And that's the best evangelizing you can do. No, preaching and people aren't going to sway them. It's modeling Jesus's character and sharing your story and being willing to be vulnerable and authentic and share how God has worked through you, and also being honest about what it was like when you were in the desert and then coming home like that prodigal son and getting that warm welcome. And that you're doing it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
This is what you're doing right here.
Yeah,
it's very clear you've put so much energy and attention and effort into it. It's amazing.
I feel like God, we say this all the time.
I'm proud of you, bro. Sorry, I'm interviewing.
No, husband's on the other side. Yeah, I love it.
I'm proud of both of you guys.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Very proud.
We felt God really talk to us in church one day at Mass, and we had done so many great things, and we're like, how can we utilize our gifts to glorify Him? And it's just, He kept saying, you need to do this. And we didn't know what it's going to, we don't look for, we don't want to be rich. We're not looking for wealth or anything like that. So it's kind of like, we're going to take this leap of faith. Yeah. And what did you just say? You said, as long as we have God on our minds and our hearts, he'll take care of it.
We talked about this morning.
Yeah.
We're like, what are we doing this for? Is anyone going to be listening to us?
Yeah. And here we are. It's like we had Cardinal Dolan as our first guest, and it was just kind of like snowballed. And yeah, we don't have a million followers yet, but it's like, it's just been a beautiful journey so far. And
you know, the one lost sheep was more important than the 99.
Yes, God bless you. Yes.
Even one doesn't mean, yeah.
Amen.
It, I mean, it probably will become a million followers, but I guarantee you somebody has listened to something that you have put out there that has been pivotal in a make or break situation. And
you've
aligned them with their creator or given them hope or relatability.
Yeah.
Podcasts are so important. When I was isolated, I'd listen to people.
That's
on like traumatic, going through traumatic events, maybe different than mine, but like nobody in my circle had lost multiple loved ones in a career and had like had to isolate. And so it's like you start to feel like real, like you're a fish out of water and you're not like anybody else. And then you hear somebody who's 1,000 miles away and they share the feelings that they're feeling and you're like, oh, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And like what you guys are doing is sharing a platform for people to feel like they're not alone. It's a game changer.
God bless you.
You too.
Oh, thank you. Well, Joey, we're so blessed to have you on, and you're going to come back. I definitely want to like continue this and just see where this journey takes you and maybe turn into something else. But it was such an honor.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Very proud of you guys.
God bless you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much. Thank
you,
brother.
If
anybody wants to connect with me, Instagram is a good spot. If I'm at the Joe Spector.
Yeah.
If you want to sign up for my newsletter, it's I don't do spam on anybody, but like once a month I send out resiliency and emotional fitness tactics.
I love it.
How to get through anxiety or challenging parenting conversations or whatever. And when the book comes out, that'll be a way to find out about it. But yeah, I love connecting with people if you want to connect on there.
Yeah, let's do it. I'll plug you in all that. Thanks. So do you want to dance real quick with no music?
Do it. Yeah. Do,
and that's how we go. That's going so quick.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.